Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call to order this hearing of the House Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. And it's good to see everyone. Welcome back to another exciting day here. The first order of business is going to be, well, first of all, a quorum is present. And so I'm going to ask Representative Quam for a motion for approval of the minutes.
I would so move, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Quam. Moves approval of the minutes of January 10th, 2023. Is there any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of approval, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Thank you. So today we are going to be hearing House File 91, which is my bill. So I'm going to go and sit at the testifier's table, and Representative Herr is going to take the gavel. She has graciously agreed to do that. So Representative Herr. Oh, and maybe before I do that, I will just move that House File 91 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Civil Law. I do have an author's amendment that I would also like to move as we get started here, just to put the bill in the order in which I would like to present it, and that is the A2 amendment. So I would move the A2 author's amendment.
Thank you, Chair Liebling, for moving that A2 amendment. If you could just briefly describe the amendment for the committee.
All right, thank you. And members who are new, it's kind of customary at the beginning, especially a first stop for a bill, to let the author kind of adjust it. Often technical assistance kind of catches up with the bill, and in fact, that's what this is. It just reflects some technical assistance from the Department of Health and the Department of Human Services to get the bill in the proper shape.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. And any discussion to this, or do we move forward? Is there any discussion to the author's amendment? Hearing none. All in favor of the author's amendment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Nay.
Nay.
The amendment is passed, and now with the bill in the shape that the author intends, if we'll move into a public testimony. We're going to actually have our author explain her bill to us first, and then we'll move into public testimony.
All right. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And so, members, House File 91 is before us, and House File 91 is a bill that repeals many old, outdated laws and I would say inappropriate laws that are on our books. We all know that freedom is a bedrock of our nation. We talk about it all the time, especially here at the legislature. Freedom includes individual liberty. Last week in this committee, we passed the PRO Act, House File 1, which reaffirmed part of what makes this a free nation, the fundamental right to make our most deeply personal decisions without interference from government. We reaffirmed Minnesota's fundamental right to individual liberty, personal privacy, and equality in decisions about whether and when to reproduce. These rights were safeguarded by the U.S. Supreme Court for 50 years, almost 50 years, under Roe v. Wade. And in Minnesota, we are fortunate to have the same rights recognized under our Minnesota Constitution because of a case called Doe v. Gomez that was decided in 1995. Before Roe was the law, and while Roe v. Wade was the law, and under Doe v. Gomez, anti-abortion politicians and groups have used many tactics to chip away at these rights, to reduce access to abortion, and to interfere in some of the most deeply personal decisions that Minnesotans make. For years, they have used shaming, inflammatory rhetoric to convince Minnesotans that politicians should be managing abortion access instead of the people most closely affected, those who are carrying the pregnancy and their medical professionals, their doctors. This constant attack on Minnesotans' right to access abortion is evident throughout Minnesota's statutes. Our laws contain many outdated, unused laws, and many that are not in effect because they were ruled unconstitutional. As an example of just one of the many outdated unused laws, there's Section 617.20, which makes it a felony to sell a medicine to produce a miscarriage. Clearly, this is not a law that's been used recently. The problem is that this patchwork of confusing laws makes it difficult for Minnesotans and Minnesota's healthcare providers to know what the law is. The result of that is a climate of fear that reduces access to abortion for Minnesotans. It chills access to abortion, and that, in fact, is what some politicians want when they pass these laws that are on the books now. Doctors become doctors because they want to practice medicine. They don't need to be investigated. They don't want to be investigated, sued, or prosecuted. When these worries hang over their heads, they will tend to practice defensively. And this has been recognized in this body many times when we talk about different kinds of lawsuits against physicians in particular, or hoops that we make them jump through. But so this chilling effect reduces access to abortion and other essential health care that Minnesotans need. I want to pause for just a moment to refer you to a recent article that came out. I saw this on NPR, but I think it's in other news outlets also. I don't have copies for everyone, but we could distribute this afterwards. But there is an article about a case that this article is just from this last December from Louisiana, about a couple who experienced a miscarriage. Now, you all probably know Louisiana has an extremely restrictive abortion law now, anti-abortion law. And this article really details how this couple was unable to get care to treat the woman's miscarriage. This is a couple that wanted this second child, was extremely distressed that they couldn't keep the pregnancy, and yet because of the chilling effect of Louisiana's law on the providers in their state, they were unable to get appropriate care for this miscarriage that the woman was having. She went to two different emergency rooms and was turned away. And not only that, when she initially had called her own provider about getting in for a pregnancy visit, she was told they weren't seeing anyone before 12 weeks. And the reason was because physicians in that state, many of them, apparently the ones she talked to, were worried about being investigated and accused of abortions, even if they weren't in fact providing them. So this is a very real thing. And even if our laws are not as extreme and weren't as extreme as Louisiana's law now is, this is exactly the problem. When we legislate conditions, restrictions, hoops for medical personnel to jump through, we are chilling access to abortion because no provider wants to be investigated, even if they think that they will be cleared. So this is really important. In Minnesota, abortion is recognized as health care. And in fact, abortion is safer than many other procedures, including giving birth. So there is no need for extra protections around it or extra reporting of abortion. It is performed by licensed medical providers. So there is no good rationale, to impose extra restrictions on them or for the law to assume that they are not moral and ethical. We don't need any special informed consent because informed consent is part of what healthcare providers already do. What's really important is that patients who seek abortion or other reproductive care should have the same privacy afforded to other kinds of medical care. It is time for politicians to get out of the room and let the patient decide with the help of their doctor, family, and other supports what they need, what their care should be, and what their life should be. That is why this bill is here, to clean up our statutes and to make the law clearer to everyone. If government is in our bedrooms and our doctors' offices or hospitals, injecting the views of politicians into our most deeply personal decisions, then we are not really free. That is why I have House File 91 here before you today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. And I do see that, okay, no, not now. Thank you, Representative Quam. We are going to be moving into our public testimony. I'm going to follow precedent that has been set by Chair Liebling that we will go through the public testimony first and then amendments, and then we will have discussion on the bill. Before we go into that, I do want to remind members and testifiers and audience to be respectful in our conversation and discourse today. Everyone is very passionate about this topic. I ask that also within this conversation that I ask that you refrain from clapping or audibly expressing your support or opposition to a position when somebody is speaking, that we give them the time and the respect that they have and we've given them. Everyone does only have 2 minutes to speak, and so we want to be respectful of that. We will be timing each of the testifiers, and when you hear the bell go off, if you could wrap up your testimony, that would be greatly appreciated. I also want to just state that we will be stopping our committee at noon as a time that has been given to us, and so if we could just be respectful of that time, that would be greatly appreciated by the committee. So with that, I want to go ahead and I'll identify the person who's going to be up to testify, but then also the person who's next after that so that you can be ready and we can get through really quickly. So the first person is Christy Hall, Senior Staff Attorney with Gender Justice. If you could come to the podium and identify yourself for the committee.
Chair, members of the committee. My name is Christy Hall. I'm the Senior Staff Attorney at Gender Justice, a legal and policy advocacy nonprofit here in Minnesota. And I'm here today to discuss the importance of repealing the unconstitutional and harmful abortion laws that remain on the books in Minnesota. In 2019, Gender Justice filed a lawsuit on behalf of two healthcare providers, the First Unitarian Society of Minneapolis and Our Justice, Minnesota's abortion fund, challenging abortion restrictions in the state. And last July, only 2 weeks after the fall of Roe v. Wade, a judge determined that these restrictions were unconstitutional and permanently blocked their enforcement. This ruling had an immediate positive impact on providers, on Minnesotans seeking abortion, and people from the upper Midwest and across the country who had already lost meaningful access to abortion care. Passing HF 91 would get these laws off our books for good. It's a necessary step to protect Minnesotans from potential future legislative and judicial action aimed at banning abortion and limiting the bodily autonomy and reproductive freedom of individuals. Leaving unconstitutional statutes on our books creates a dangerous legal ambiguity for providers and patients in our state. We only have to look to our neighbors in North Dakota and Wisconsin, where all abortion care has ceased, to see the effects of old laws coming back to sow chaos and confusion. There are a number of harmful and unconstitutional anti-abortion laws this bill would remove, including the requirement that doctors deliver state-mandated anti-abortion propaganda to patients seeking abortion care, including demonstrably false information such as debunked claims linking abortion to breast cancer, a mandatory 24-hour waiting period for patients, a medically unnecessarily prohibited advanced practice registered nurses and others providing abortion.
You could wrap up your testimony. Thank you.
I urge you to pass HF 91.
Thank you. And next up will be Dr. Steve Kelvin, and after that on deck would be Shyla Walker.
Good
Dr. Kelvin, yes, introduce yourself to the committee and begin your testimony.
Sounds good. Thank you. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Steve Kelvin. I'm a board-certified physician specializing in OBGYN and the subspecialty of maternal fetal medicine. I've cared for women and their babies during thousands of normal and complicated pregnancies. I currently serve as an appointed member of the U.S. HHS Secretary's Advisory Committee on Infant and Maternal Mortality. I understand the complexity and strong emotions surrounding abortion, and I speak today in opposition to House File 91. The related House and Senate File 1 bill is obviously designed to enshrine an unlimited right to abortion in Minnesota that goes well beyond the 1973 Roe decision. The bill prohibits gestational age limits and will make our state an extreme international outlier compared to countries like France and Germany. House File 91 takes an axe to all statutes referencing abortion. It's a breathtaking grab bag of deletion and repeal. What really grabbed my attention was the removal of a prohibition on abortion at birth centers. Over the last decade, midwife colleagues and I have provided care for more than 3,700 mother-baby pairs at our birth center by supporting the desire for safe and empowering physiologic birth. Opening the door for abortions at birth centers is unsafe and it's schizophrenic. It is legislative malpractice. There's much that we can agree on to improve maternal and child health in Minnesota. Expansion of access to culturally sensitive support with midwives and doulas improves care and addresses persistent racial outcome disparities. During this session, your committee should address barriers to this better model of care and hold DHS and Medicaid managed care organizations accountable for how they spend more than $500 million in pregnancy care each year. Unfortunately, the focus of House File 91 is not in that direction. It is designed to prohibit any regulation of abortion, a position that the majority of Minnesotans do not support. I appreciate the chance to testify.
Thank you. Next is Shiloh Walker, and on deck is Kathy Blazer. If I stated your name incorrectly, please forgive me for that.
Peace, everybody. My name is Shiloh Walker. I'm the executive director of Our Justice. We're an abortion fund that has been supporting people seeking abortion care in Minnesota since before Roe v. Wade was even decided. We operate within the framework of reproductive justice, which analyzes how people's ability to determine their own reproductive destiny is linked directly to the conditions of their community and holds that support and resources for making choices regarding reproduction must be, at a minimum, safe, affordable, and accessible. Moving beyond a demand for privacy and respect for individual decision making to include the social supports necessary for our individual decisions to be optimally realized, this framework also includes obligations from our government for protecting human rights. Prior to last year's court decision striking down many of Minnesota's anti-abortion laws, the conditions these laws created were actively hostile to these aims, attacking accessibility in particular, but negatively affecting affordability and safety as well. In our work, we saw survivors of domestic violence hindered in their efforts to get abortion care by requirements regarding medically unnecessary repeat visits and waiting periods that increased the likelihood of their abusive partners finding out about their abortions. We saw minors forced to choose between contacting parents they have no relationship with or having a stranger behind a judge's bench decide based on their grades whether or not they were worthy of having an abortion. The hidden cost of abortion care in terms of time off of work, child care expenses, transportation, and more were driven up with every additional hurdle that patients had to clear. And rather than spending our time helping people get the care they needed, we spent it helping them navigate laws designed specifically to make abortion inaccessible, particularly to Black people, Indigenous people, and poor people. These laws are still on the books and they still pose a threat to the reproductive justice. This is unacceptable. No one should have to be an expert in Minnesota law to obtain essential health care.
Thank you. Thank you for that testimony, Shayla. Next, we will go to Kathy Blazer, and then on deck is Deborah Herman. Deborah Herman-Judah, and my apologies, yes, and if you could please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for this opportunity to testify against House File 91.
I am Kathy Blazer, co-executive director of Minnesota Citizens Concern for Life. This bill would appallingly repeal existing law which protects the life of an infant born alive after an attempted abortion, moving Minnesota backwards from a community of compassion to one of active and callous cruelty. Our current law requires that when a baby is born alive following an abortion, healthcare providers must exercise the same degree of professional skill and care that would be offered to any other child born alive at the same gestational age. Protecting these born alive infants underscores a premise of fundamental human compassion. If a baby is born alive, even after an attempted abortion, he or she is a full member of the human community who deserves our compassion and our care, just like any other living human being. Minnesota led the nation in passing this law, with many states following suit when the truth of live birth abortions became national news. These abortions resulted in second and third trimester babies being delivered alive and then intentionally set aside and left to die a slow, painful, lonely death. One eyewitness nurse testified, "It was not uncommon for a live aborted baby to linger for an hour or even longer. One of these babies lived for almost an entire 8-hour shift." I ask you to not move Minnesota backwards and to vote against this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we will have Deborah Herman Judah, and on deck is Michelle Evans. And please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Deborah Herman Judah. I'm a registered nurse and a women's health nurse practitioner. I'm also an abortion provider. I'm here today to urge you to vote for HF 91. My entire nursing career, spanning 15 years, has focused on reproductive health care. I've seen teens defer to parenting because they feared the judicial bypass process. They were teens who couldn't notify their parents because of estrangement, incarceration, molestation, history of abuse. I've witnessed countless readings of a medically irrelevant script that suggests a link between abortion and breast cancer, while also referencing child support and perinatal hospice. I've watched people spend their entire day in a clinic lobby until they've completed the 24-hour waiting period required for their procedure. None of these moments felt like healthcare to me. They felt like barriers to healthcare. I said as much during my deposition as witness in Doe versus Minnesota. I say to you today, Minnesotans need laws that promote, not prevent, access to reproductive healthcare. Minnesotans need you to pass HF 91, but so do people in Iowa, Wisconsin, Nebraska, North Dakota, and South Dakota, because people from these states are coming to Minnesota for reproductive health care. People from all over this country are coming to Minnesota for reproductive health care. I've met them while volunteering in the recovery room at WeHealth Clinic in Duluth. I've spoken with them during phone appointments with Just the Pill. I was on a telemedicine call when Roe versus Wade was overturned, and the patient asked, "Can I still get my abortion?" The doctor said yes. She said abortion is still legal in Minnesota. Please pass HF 91 so that abortion is more than just legal in Minnesota. It's also free from unconstitutional barriers. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for your testimony. Next is Michelle Even, and on deck is Emily Richter. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Michelle Even, and I am the political director at Minnesota Right to Life. I am here today to give voice to the unborn babies that have been viciously murdered in our state through abortion and beg of you, on behalf of those yet to be killed, to stop this heinous slaughter of the innocent. Minnesota Right to Life has testified before numerous committees regarding House File 1, cleverly named the PRO Act, asking legislators to vote no. Currently, all items listed in House File 1 are protected by law in Minnesota. So what has changed? Under House File 1, Minnesota mothers or any mother crossing state lines at any age, for any reason, at any time during their pregnancy, at taxpayers' expense, have the right to murder their babies. House File 1 removes all limitations of any kind on abortion. As the few safeguards placed in the murdering of babies, as if there ever could possibly be, are repealed in House File 91, it is obvious to the millions of folks who cherish life that this is indeed a death bill. I, along with millions of other people, are tired of hearing my body, my choice, or bodily autonomy. What about my wallet, my choice? House File 1 will now remove all exceptions from using taxpayer dollars to pay for the murder of babies simply because it was an inconvenient time to have a child. The reason for over 98% of abortions is listed as inconvenience. It's obvious that many of you don't care about this, but for the folks that believe murdering a baby in the womb is morally wrong, or individuals with religious affiliations, this is deeply grieving. You are forcing Minnesota taxpayers to be an accomplice to murder. Minnesota Right to Life and the pro-life community will never forget the politicians who vote yes to murdering babies.
I would just like to remind our testifiers in the committee that the bill before us is not House File 1, but House File 91. And so if our testimony can be focused on House File 91. Next to testify is Emily Richter, and on deck is Jason Atkins. And if you could please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Hello, members of the committee. My name is Emily Richter, and a second trimester abortion saved my life. In March of 2020, I was 19 weeks pregnant when we received the gutting news that our baby girl was diagnosed with a severe neural tube defect called anencephaly, of which it's 100% fatal, and there is no cure. We were left with the impossible decision to terminate a pregnancy we so very much wanted. While the vast majority of abortions occur in the first trimester, ours occurred in the second, as do many abortions for fetal anomalies that often go undetected earlier in pregnancy. Minnesota law required me to take the following traumatizing next steps before moving forward with the medical care I required: an abortion at 19 and a half weeks, a 24-hour waiting period. After finding out that our baby was incompatible with life outside the womb, I had to wait 24 hours to think about my decision and consider all of my options, of which there were none, before I had legally had the ability to schedule my abortion, which did nothing more than delay medical care while my risk of hemorrhaging and sepsis increased. I was also subjected to state-directed counseling, where I had read aloud to me and then subsequently signed a form with medically inaccurate information that was designed to dissuade me from undergoing the abortion in the first place. Not only did hearing this information from my OB, a trusted source, deepen the pain of our baby's terminal diagnosis, it placed shame and politicized the medical care I needed to survive. And while this is just our family's story of abortion, these stories are so important, especially now, and especially as reproductive rights are threatened. These are stories of our friends, family members, neighbors, and loved ones. People who have partial miscarriages, those with ectopic pregnancies, survivors of incest and rape, people facing financial and economic constraints, and people like me who are carrying babies with terminal birth defects often incompatible with life.
If you could wrap up your testimony.
And like all of us here, they're Minnesotans. I urge you to vote yes on House File 91. Thank you.
Next is Jason Atkins, and on deck is Dr. Nicole Chasen.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Chair Liebling, I'm Jason Atkins, Executive Director of the Minnesota Catholic Conference, the public policy voice of the Catholic Church in Minnesota. We're here in opposition to House File 91 today, and I'll speak to Section 10 of the bill, which increases taxpayer funding of abortion through MinnesotaCare. The Catholic Church is the largest non-governmental provider of charitable, health care, and educational services in the United States and around the world, and probably Minnesota as well. We serve all people not because we are Catholic, but because they are Catholic, but because we are Catholic. We have consistently advocated for greater access to health care, and this year are again supporting making undocumented persons and families eligible for Minnesota Care. In fact, my predecessor, Father James Habiger, was a lead advocate for the creation of Minnesota Care and played a key role in getting it passed. I mention this to point out that programs such as Minnesota Care have a broad variety of stakeholders beyond abortion providers and their wish list. As legislators, you inherit the work of your predecessors and are responsible for being good stewards of what they have built and for the common good of all Minnesotans, not just today's in-groups. In fact, these laws were passed with bipartisan majorities by your predecessors. I would strongly urge you to not infuse abortion politics into important programs serving families such as Minnesota Care, and respect the perspective of organizations and communities who have been advocates for these programs and whose ministries actually do the work of providing health care. The Catholic Church will not support legislation or health care programs that fund the destruction of innocent human life. Please vote no. Thank you.
Thank you. Up next is Dr. Nicole Chason, and on deck is Mary Amiat. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Nicole Chason. I'm a practicing family physician in Minneapolis and also an associate medical director at Planned Parenthood North Central States. I'm proud to provide abortion care to my patients along with a broad spectrum of other essential health care to patients across the lifespan. My patients come to their appointments from all walks of life. Many have questions, and every single one of them is unique. Some are even teens that I've followed since they were newborns or young children. As a trusted adult in their lives, I've had teens seek advice when they find out they're pregnant. Some come with a parent, some without. Some are asking for help telling their parents, to be honest. And some have continued their pregnancy, but some have ended their pregnancies. What I can attest to is that they seek information from trusted individuals, including their healthcare provider. And we should be able to help them without adding barriers to care. Repeal of the state's restrictive laws has lifted a huge burden for many people seeking abortion, but particularly for the youth that I work with. In healthcare, we are trained to assess decision-making capacity for all sorts of medical treatments. It's something I do in every clinic appointment with every patient. This is true for adults and not just for teens. I have always been trusted in my ability to determine if a young person is able to decide to continue a pregnancy. I should also be trusted in my ability to determine if they are able to decide to end a pregnancy. To support all patients, we must remove the restrictive anti-abortion laws that have been found unconstitutional. If we don't, these restrictive laws remain a potential threat to abortion rights and access in the future. I urge you to please support House File 91. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next testifier is Mary Amiat, and on deck is Kit Ketchum. Okay, so it looks like Mary may not be here. Is Mary here? Give her another.
I am here, but I was not aware I was testifying at this hearing. It was a different.
All right, thank you. Then we will go ahead and move to Kit Ketchum. And on deck is Munira Muhammad. If you could please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Kit Ketchum. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 91. I'm a person who had an abortion in 1974, 1 year before the Roe v. Wade decision, 1 year after the Roe v. Wade decision. At that time, I had to travel 3 hours to the nearest abortion provider, but I did not have to listen to state-mandated anti-abortion propaganda from him. I did not have to make a second trip because of a state-mandated 24-hour waiting period. I did not have to deal with the mandatory burial of the products of conception. I'm now 71 years old, and I have daughters and a granddaughter. I want them to have the same rights that I had during my reproductive years. Minnesota has only just overcome these and other restrictions last year through a court decision. As we have so tragically seen in the Dobbs case, court decisions are too easily overturned. Minnesota needs legislation ending these punitive abortion restrictions. Minnesota's state constitution provides strong protections for our right to continue or end a pregnancy and to get an abortion if that is what we choose. We need to pass this bill to ensure that this right is implemented in law to support women and families in their most personal decisions. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Munira Mohammed, and then on deck, and our last presenter is Eliza O'Brien. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Hello, Chair and House members. My name is Munira Mohammed, and I'm with the ACLU of Minnesota, the American Civil Liberties Union. The ACLU is here to speak in support of House File 91 regarding the repeals to current state statutes. We see this as an urgent civil liberties issue dealing with bodily autonomy and reproductive freedom. In prior committees, we have spoken on the need for the legislature to go much further than just passing the PRO Act. While passing that bill would be a significant win, we also encourage the legislature to take steps to remove unnecessary restrictions in state law. Repealing obstructive requirements and criminalizing penalties would greatly help Minnesotans looking for reproductive care. Repealing things such as parental notification, prohibitions on abortions being performed by non-physicians, restrictions to hospital after first trimester, mandatory reporting to the commissioner, and informed consent in 24-hour wait periods. These repeals ensure that people across the state can meaningfully exercise their rights without barriers, and an ACLU Minnesota supports House File 91 and is grateful to the committee for hearing it. Thank you to the chair and members.
Thank you. And our last testifier is Eliza O'Brien. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Hello, I want to thank the chair and the committee for hearing my testimony. My name is Eliza O'Brien, and I am here to show my support for House File 91. Abortions are a necessary part of reproductive health care, and it is essential that we ensure Minnesota remains a state where everyone has access to safe and legal abortion. I serve as clinic manager at Whole Woman's Health of Minnesota in Bloomington, and I have escorted, volunteered, and worked in abortion care for over 3 years. The removal of abortion restrictions has astronomically improved people's access to abortion in Minnesota. Our state needs to serve as a safe place for people to access abortion care. Minnesota has started to live up to that mission with some of these restrictions were ruled unconstitutional, but we still need to get the outdated and harmful laws off the books. One such law that was ruled unconstitutional is the 24-hour waiting period. We know pregnant people know what is best for them, and a state-mandated 24-hour waiting period adds stigma and burden to people seeking care. Doctors would need to read false information to patients before their appointment, which only added shame and confusion to patients. For example, I've had to work closely with our staff to coordinate 24-hour physician phone calls around patients' flights, work, childcare, and school, while ensuring this call happens at least 24 hours before their abortion. This adds stress for patients, especially those who are already being forced to travel for care. We've had to delay care altogether or make completely other plans if they miss the call prior to this restriction being deemed unconstitutional. This, of course, is especially harmful to low-income patients and those with less resources. Since these laws have been deemed unconstitutional, access has greatly improved. Patients can make appointments when it's convenient for them rather than jump through medically unnecessary hoops. We can be sure our staff and providers are telling people medically correct information. Patients can receive care in a timely manner. With so much choice being taken away from people in this country, I am proud to live in a state where we empower and equip people to make their own decisions about their body. Removing these laws is necessary to ensure our laws match what has already been deemed unconstitutional. House File 91 is the first step to protecting and expanding abortion access. Please support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. And I just want to say before we move into the amendments part of our hearing today, just to say thank you to our testifiers. Regardless of which side of the issue you are on, that each person's story belongs to them. And we appreciate you coming today and sharing your story with us. So it looks like here we do have a couple of amendments that are in front of us. We have the first is the A3 amendment. And may I ask who is bringing forward the A3 amendment?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A3 amendment.
Representative Brindley moves the A3 amendment. Can you just review the amendment with us, and we can open up for discussion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, I'd ask for a roll call on this amendment.
Roll call has been requested.
We have heard lots of words used today, words like inappropriate laws, words like unconstitutional. We probably should have a basic civics lesson on the different branches of government and how this works. The legislature actually does not determine that, and there actually is a high court in the state of Minnesota that has not heard any of these things. But on the issue of the Born Alive Act, I want to be very clear. This amendment would delete the provision to repeal the Born Alive Act. In statute, the definition of born alive is when a baby takes a breath, has a heartbeat, moves voluntarily. That is the definition of born alive. It is very clearly a person who is alive. It is shocking to me. It is absolutely shocking to me that we are having this discussion. It was not enough to support the most radical abortion policy in the world. Now we are saying that even if a baby is born alive, that child also should not live, that child also has no rights. That's what this repealer does. This repealer literally allows infanticide. That is what this repealer does. And to be clear, the statute does not force a baby who is born alive. It does not force parenting on parents who were seeking an abortion. It literally states that when there is a human being breathing, heart beating, moving, that human being deserves care and that human being deserves rights. It is abhorrent that we are sitting here right now having this conversation. Absolutely abhorrent. And I would encourage understanding. I appreciate Chair Liebling's newfound love of freedom. And I hope we see that in other areas. But when you have a living, breathing, heart beating, moving person, we have some moral obligation to provide care. The dehumanizing that House File 91 is encouraging. It's not just that women have the right to abortion. Now it is that even if a baby is born alive, that baby can be killed and allowed to die. That's what this repealer does. I cannot believe the lack of humanity that is on the table today.
And I would just like to remind the committee that, and the members, that if you're explaining your amendment, if we could just stick to explaining the amendment, we can have discussion on the bill itself after we are through with the amendment. Representative Liebling, do you have any comments before we move into questions regarding this amendment?
I guess I will, because it's hard not to respond. And obviously, I think what we've just seen is exhibit A of the kind of personal, inflammatory, politically motivated rhetoric that is raised around this and saying things that are absolutely untrue. 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 So when we repeal this statute that has these statutes that have particular impact on abortion, does not remove all the other things in Minnesota law. An amendment like this law that we are repealing in this bill is, first of all, based on a lie about how abortion works. This is not what happens in abortion, but it is built around this insulting idea that medical professionals are unethical and they need politicians like Representative New Brinkley standing over their shoulder in the room where they're treating the patient to make sure that they behave appropriately. This is insulting to the medical community. It is demonizing doctors who perform abortions. And to say that there are no protections in Minnesota law for infants who are alive is absolutely untrue and inflammatory. So, you know, most importantly, laws like this one that she's so shocked that we want to repeal it, these laws were put in place for the very reason to make doctors worry about being investigated and sued and prosecuted so they won't want to perform abortions. This is the harm that is created. You could say, I suppose, that this doesn't do any harm because if it's already in law, why not just leave it there? But the harm it does is that it restricts access. It interferes in a person's own decision and with their doctor who is ethical, who we need to presume to be ethical because they are also covered by rules and they answer to a board, they are licensed. So I have to say, it is so insulting. This is like, what if we had a law that said, legislators must not beat their spouses. Legislators must not beat their spouses. Oh, we should put that in law. And then when we try to repeal it, we'll have legislators like this saying, now we're inviting legislators to beat their spouses. This is just absurd, inflammatory rhetoric. And I just find it so offensive that it is just, it's hard to even express how offensive it is and how offensive this law is to our medical community.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. And I do have Representative Quam from earlier. Do you still want to speak
to this?
Go ahead, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, frankly, it'd be nice if we didn't have to have things in law. You would think, most of the time you think that would never happen. But fortunately, things do happen. And we've had to specifically say something. It's like the labels on things don't swallow, you know, X, Y, and Z. It's like you wouldn't think people would do that. But there are occurrences. There have been times in multiple cases of where a person survives an abortion and has been let to die. And it'd be great if we didn't have to have something that says, no, if a person survives, you provide medical care. That would be common sense. That would be what probably everyone in this room would say. But unfortunately, it's happened the other way. So, unfortunately, we have to have in statute things to make it clear that you do provide care and aid to a person that survives an abortion. Because isn't that the definition which everybody can agree on? If a person is born and is alive, it's a person. So I think that's what this little three-line amendment does, is just say, let's keep that common sense thing in there that says you provide care. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Quam. And Representative, I saw that you're on, but Representative Backer is ahead. Is that okay if I go? Representative Backer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment makes sense. Last week, I talked about the run that I had, not last August, but the August 1st. Let me just share with you, when that infant was born, that infant was not breathing. That was at 3 a.m. Saturday morning. I, as an EMT, am required to do everything in my power to resuscitate that infant. 19 weeks, or was 20 weeks. Oh, that infant had the same fingers, hands, eyes, and nose that we all have. It was a baby. I have up here from the department from January 1st of 2021 to December 31st of 2021, five aborted procedures in which born alive infants were reported. That doesn't mean there was only five. That's what was reported. That infant, that child, if I show up on the scene and did not provide the care, I would lose my license. And I'm a volunteer EMT. I don't do this for a living, okay? I had a run last weekend, full arrest, at 5 a.m. Sunday morning at 1:15, I had a car accident of five people. Two of them were children, two cars. One was thrown from the vehicle. I'm required to do everything in my power to make sure the person, those people live. Just like last August with that infant that was born 20 weeks. This is no different, folks. The doctor, born alive, this is just common sense. We have dogs, cats, and cattle, if this gets into law, has better protection. I, as an EMT, have to do everything in my power. It just makes sense that health facilities do the same. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Backer. And I just want to remind us that we have five amendments in front of us, and we have about, 40 minutes left. So for us to just keep our comments brief, and if there are questions, to state that there is a question. Otherwise, if you're making a statement, just so that we're aware. Why don't we go ahead and go back to Representative New Brindley?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would just say that perhaps on bills and issues that deal with literally life and death, we should allow the time that we need, regardless of how much time that is. I would just thank you, Representative Backer. I was going to make the same point. We were just told by the bill author that it is a lie that infants are born alive. Well, there's five of them last year. Just last year, there were five. So it's not a lie, but I would welcome, rather than vitriolic rhetoric, I would welcome hearing exactly what the lie is and what the lies are. I would welcome that. Be specific. I would love to hear what the lies are, because I was just told that I am lying. I am literally reading statute that is currently in the books on a definition of what it means to be born alive. I am literally reading the report, which, of course, we're going to get rid of so that we can't know this information in the future, because that, of course, hurts the argument that we should have any guardrails around this at all, because when we know the data, we understand that there were five infants born alive last year. That's, of course, very inconvenient to the totality of this bill. But I would love to know exactly where I am lying, because there were five children born alive following abortions last year.
Thank you, Representative New Brindley. And Representative Levy, I'll let you comment after we have our last speaker, and Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. I can't say it any better than Chair Liebling did as far as why this amendment is out of line. This amendment, to me, is truly an insult to doctors and does not comport with how our medical system works. Currently, licensed medical professionals are sworn to the Hippocratic Oath, and they are delivering reliant, compassionate, patient-centered care. And I don't believe this amendment has any place in this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bierman. And Representative Liebling will have you final comments before voting on the amendment.
Right. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And so here is the lie. The lie was that, Representative New Brindley, you said two things. You said at least two things that I wrote down. You said that this amendment, that the bill is saying that a child born alive should not live. That is an absolute lie. And you said that this bill allows infanticide, and that too is a lie. So, I just do want to note that Representative Backer was talking about how he, as an EMT, is required to try to save the life of an infant who's alive when he gets there. Well, we don't have a statute, to my knowledge, that says specifically an EMT must not allow to die an infant without trying to save its life. That's not in the statutes. And yet, Representative Backer talked about his obligation as a healthcare professional to try to save that life. Our doctors have the same obligation. And to say that they don't, and to say that we need to give them a special, special statute with regard to abortion, to say that they need to respond ethically and do what they're supposed to do as medical professionals, that is an insult to them, Madam Chair. And so that is why it is really important to vote no on this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. And a roll call has been requested by Representative Brindley, author of the A3 amendment. And if our clerk can take the roll. Chair Liebling.
No.
Vice Chair Bierman.
No.
Lead Schumacher.
Aye.
Representative Akam.
No.
Representative Backer.
Aye.
Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Carroll.
No.
Representative Elkins.
No.
Representative Fisher.
No.
Representative Hemmingson Yeager.
No.
Representative Herr.
No.
Representative Keel.
Aye.
Representative Murphy.
Yes.
Representative Nadeau.
Aye.
Representative New Brindley.
Aye.
Representative Perryman.
Aye.
Representative Quam.
Aye.
Representative Ryer.
No.
Representative Smith.
No.
With 8 ayes and 11 nay, the amendment does not pass. Up next is the A5 amendment. If the author of the A5 amendment could identify themselves and explain the amendment to us.
A5. Chair, my name is Bernie Perryman, and I am representing A4. And
we are actually doing the A5 first.
I'm sorry.
That is okay.
We're not doing A5.
Oh, was the A5 withdrawn?
It's removed. Madam Chair, A5 amendment is not being offered.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. With that, then, we will move to the A4 amendment, and I think this is Representative Perryman's amendment. Is that correct?
Correct. Thank you, Chair. Amendment 4, I move. It simply states it keeps the parental notification requirements in place.
Thank you for that. And discussion on the A4 amendment.
And Chair, I would like to take a roll call on that as well, please.
Roll call has been requested. Thank you.
Chair, I would like to present that I've heard a lot to allow the patients make their own decisions. Well, I have to ask, can a 13-year-old girl patient really make that kind of decision of having an abortion and such a huge decision in their life? And aren't we diminishing the role of our parents in this decision? And will the boyfriend then make the decision for the girlfriend? So I just believe that this is going down the wrong road. Supporting to conceal a personal, mental, and medical event for a woman, and it's hard to use the word woman, because we're talking about a 13-year-old girl that can make this decision. And it's a potential decision that will affect this individual the rest of their lives. Think of when you were 13. What kind of distressful decisions were you making at that time? I'm sure it wasn't anything like this, and the maturity level at 13 is also not capable of such a big decision. Think of your own children as well, if they need to make such a decision. I ask that you reflect on the parental notification for the best part of this Amendment 4. I plead for your support. I ask for your support also because of the fact that I'm from South St. Cloud, and there is a lot of sex trafficking going on. And I'm just asking, is this going to be using some of these kids or children or individuals or women, the definition that you want to put on it, are they going to be pawns to these predators and fix any mistakes for them and keep them in the market at their own benefits of making money? I'm concerned this will also stir that pot and encourage this kind of decision-making more and more, especially when I already have that problem in South St. Cloud. Thank you.
Representative Perryman, I heard two questions, and then I don't know if those were rhetorical questions, or, and I'm honestly asking this, I'm not trying to be sarcastic, or if they were directed to Representative Liebling, author of the bill. I just want to get clarification from you, if you would like for her to answer, or you were just asking.
They were more rhetorical, okay. Personal questions on my thought process.
Okay, thank you. And I don't know if Representative Liebling wants to respond, if we could wait till the end for the response. All right, thank you. We'll go ahead to Representative Kwong.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it would be useful for the committee to have staff send to all of us the legal definition of minor, and also send to all of us every single current restriction to a minor. You know, a minor can't get a tattoo without the permission. You know, there are a lot of things in statute, so we can see the scope at which across the board the state looks at the responsibility of a parent and what the capabilities of a minor to decide. And I'm a parent, and I think parents are important. And so it's not trivial to say your child doesn't need the parent to know or be consulted or informed on some things that are, I think, less categorized by, you know, minor insignificant, and should be categorized as major life decisions. So this won't be the first bill where we get into discussions of minors and parents. So I think we should be better informed. Thank you.
Representative Nadeau.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. I am very supportive of parental consent. I mean, it's a struggle that we have all over. I mean, I do quite a bit of work with school-based mental health. And right now we're debating the issue because in some cases it's super important, depending on the issue that a student in school is facing, that parental consent is a challenge. But it is still a requirement that students get parental consent, that therapists have that parental consent, because they understand the vital nature of the relationship between that student, their parent, that familial unit. There's intrinsic value to that, and I think that this is a common. I hate even to use common sense, but it is it's an important component to put back in this bill, in my opinion. So I support it. I wish others would. I think this is a simple way to try to keep this in a better place. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Liebling.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and. So I think it's important for members to know that the bill before you repeals subdivision 2 of the statute and et cetera. But subdivision 1 is the general statement of when a minor can give consent. And it says any minor may give effective consent for a number of things, including medical, mental, and other health services to determine the presence of or treat pregnancy and conditions associated therewith, venereal disease, alcohol and other drug abuse, and the consent of no other person is required. So current Minnesota law protects minors' ability to make these decisions without consent. Now, we're not here today with a bill changing that. We could debate that. I know members have different feelings about that. And I know there are pros and cons to this. And you know, I hear people saying that you think about your own children, you want them to come to you for consent and all of that. And, you know, I think probably all of us who are parents recognize that we want to have that relationship with our child and that we feel we have something to add and offer when the child has some difficult circumstances. But I don't want to get too deeply into what the general law is about, but it is there to protect minors, I think, who don't have a supportive parent, for whom it might mean a barrier to care. Now, the abortion piece was written as an exception to the general minor consent provision. And what we're doing here is removing that exception. And why? Because we believe that abortion is health care, and that if minors can get other services for these kinds of things, including pregnancy, without consent of a parent and without having to justify or explain their decision, then abortion should be no different. So the provision that we are repealing in this bill denies privacy, autonomy over their own body, and access to abortion services to minors. And that is why we believe it should be repealed. Not only that, it is currently not in effect in Minnesota because it has been found unconstitutional in the Doe v. Minnesota case. So that's why it is being repealed. I understand that we have a lot of feelings about minors and their giving consent and so on, but it is in the bill because abortion should not be treated differently than other health care services. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I support voting no against the amendment. And because the amendment doesn't work in the real world, when you're dealing with youth who've been homeless, who've been trafficked, who've been subject to incest, who've been subject to rape, many times they're feeling ashamed, they're feeling the trauma, and having to disclose that, and then where it says here you have to make the proper disclosure to the proper authorities, many times they don't want to do that because of the shame and everything else that's attended in there. This is a very painful process that they go through. They are not connected with their families, and in some instances, the declaration would cause a situation where they would never be able to heal for any potential reunification with their families. And sometimes they are placed in a tough situation, and by having this position in here that we have right now makes it difficult for them to deal with the situation that they need to and eventually heal with their family at some point down the road. These are not ideal situations. However, we are faced with horrors out there that sometimes the real world just cannot properly address or forces people into situations that we could not possibly imagine. And that's why I am against the amendment.
Representative Liebling, any comments before we take the vote on the...
I would just ask members to vote no.
Thank you. And a roll call has been requested by Representative Perryman. And with that, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Liebling.
No.
Vice Chair Bierman.
No.
Leach Schumacher.
Schumacher, aye.
Representative Akam.
No.
Representative Backer.
Backer, aye.
Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Carroll.
No.
Representative Elkins.
No.
Representative Fisher.
No.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
No.
Representative Herr.
No.
Representative Keel.
Aye.
Representative Murphy.
Aye.
Representative Nadeau.
Aye.
Representative New Brindley.
Of course.
Representative Perryman.
Aye.
Representative Quam.
Aye.
Representative Ryer.
No.
Representative Smith.
No.
With 8 ayes and 11 nays, the amendment does not pass. Next amendment in front of us is the A6 amendment, and if the author could identify themselves and explain the amendment.
Madam Chair, Representative Backer, I would like to move the A6 amendment, and I am requesting a roll call, Madam Chair.
Representative Backer moves the A6 amendment and requests a roll call. If you could just explain the amendment briefly for the committee.
And then after the brief description, I'll be able to. It basically keep several of the reporting requirements that are removed in the House File 91.
Discussions on the A6.
Madam Chair.
Representative Backer.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. A couple things here, members. Four things this amendment does. It keeps reporting requirements for babies born alive, number one. Number two, it keeps reporting data of women who die within 30 days of having an abortion. And just to let people know, in the U.S. alone, from 1998 to 2010, there was 108 deaths of women who had an abortion. The third thing this amendment does, members, it keeps the reporting data of abortion complications, so it does report that. And then finally, it keeps the reporting data on out-of-state abortions. One of the things that we have always heard, and this has been on both sides of the aisles for years, about transparency. When you spend public dollars, it is important for us to be transparent. This is why we are on camera today, and so forth. So I am going to read a statement that is from one of our presidents. It says, my administration is committed to creating an unprecedented level of openness in government. We will work together to ensure the public trust and establish a system of transparency, public participation, and collaboration. Openness will strengthen our democracy and promote efficiency and effectiveness in government. Government should be transparent, and that is highlighted in this president's statement. Transparency promotes accountability and provides information for citizens about what their government is doing. And I'm not going to ask the author of the bill a gotcha question and ask her who that president is. That would not be fair. But that is President Obama. That is right off the White House at his time. And that is what we're talking about. We're talking about reporting. As an EMT, I'll use my example last week. You'll get tired of me using my EMT. I have 28 years. I have a lot of things I can share. And, yes, I do see the horrors of society myself, unfortunately. And I see the blessings and compassion of society. And we've not talked enough on the committee of compassion about this issue. That's for a different time. But last week, 5 a.m., my second of my third runs as a volunteer, was a full arrest on a quite young gentleman. And unfortunately, we lost that gentleman, and he was a father of three. But the amount of reporting I have to do on every single run is one of the reasons some people don't volunteer as an EMT. I mean, I spent hours of documenting it because I have to call the coroner. I have to call the deputies in to, to check, because this is something that's important, check to make sure that I did not make a mistake because I am human. I did not get back done from that run to at least 7:30. Then reporting what we did with the coroner, just very detailed report, which then is submitted for public record and so forth. So we require reporting for a lot of things on use of public dollars. We talk about that abortions use public dollars, enhance that. We need that type of transparency for the taxpayers of what goes on. And again, what this bill does is it requires reporting of born alive, women who die within 30 days of having an abortion, keeps reporting data of complications with abortion, and keeps reporting data of out-of-state abortions. Thank you, madams. I would ask for your support of this really common sense transparency that President Obama supports transparency for more effectiveness of government. Thank you.
Further discussion on the A6. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. having data allows us to make informed decisions. Too often we have something come up and we say, well, what's the information? What's the, you know, this and that? And we don't have the data. And I think it's just prudent that we have the data, because we don't know in next year, 5 years, where that might be useful for something. So just as a practice, we should be careful about not taking data that we collect.
Thank you, Representative Quam. And Representative Liebling, last comments?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So, you know, first of all, I guess I would say that this is not about openness in government or transparency in government. This is individuals who are being asked to give very personal responses, and physicians who are being forced to collect and report those responses. So this is not President Obama saying his administration was going to be open. This is about individual health care data that is being demanded. You know, why do you want to make this personal decision? All these different things about the person and the decision they're making, that's being collected here. And you know, the fact that some of it is paid for with public dollars. You know, there's a lot of health care we pay for with public dollars. We pay for a lot of heart attack care under MA. That doesn't mean that we interrogate every patient about, you know, how many cheeseburgers did they eat, and then have that all reported so that we can see how many patients with heart attacks ate cheeseburgers. We don't do that, right? This is abortion again being singled out. Now, you know, I do understand, and I have some commonality of interest with those of you who just kind of find that report really interesting, and it does give us, you know, interesting data that we often don't get in other areas of healthcare. But we've been getting that data, I think, for about 25 years now. And it does put a burden on healthcare providers. There are penalties attached to not collecting and reporting that data. And I believe some of this actually was found unconstitutional for that reason. And, you know, this is a very, these decisions that people are making are very personal. And to have the intrusion of having the medical provider having to ask all this very personal information is very intrusive. It puts another burden on the right to have an abortion, and it also increases the stigma of having an abortion. So because this is so burdensome and confusing, these rules also chill access to abortion, and that is why members should vote no on the amendment.
With that, a roll call has been requested by Representative Backer, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Liebling.
No.
Vice Chair Bierman.
No.
Leach Schumacher.
Aye.
Representative Akam.
No.
Representative Backer.
Backer, aye.
Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Carroll.
No.
Representative Elkins.
No.
Representative Fisher.
No.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
No.
Representative Herr.
No.
Representative Keel.
Aye.
Representative Murphy.
Murphy, aye.
Representative Nadeau.
Aye.
Representative New Brindley.
Aye.
Representative Perryman.
Perryman, aye.
Representative Quam.
Da.
What? I'm sorry, Representative Quam?
Are we only required to or allowed to vote in English?
I think she just didn't hear you, Representative Quam. If you could just repeat it. Thank you. Da.
Aye. Representative Ryer.
No.
Representative Smith.
No.
With 8 ayes and 11 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Next amendment, and our last amendment, is the A7. May the author of the amendment identify themselves and move the amendment.
Madam Chair, I would like to move A7 and ask that we have a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. And if you could just describe the amendment, and then we can have discussion on it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A7 has to deal with sections 10 in the bill and would effectively retain the stricken language in section 10 that right now prohibits public funds from providing abortions under Minnesota care unless the life of the mother is in danger or a significant bodily harm to the mother could occur if the baby was carried to term. This amendment, I should point out, is also supported by the Minnesota Catholic Conference. I find it very interesting, members, that as we deal with this in the first days of our legislative year, that my colleagues across the aisle have felt that abortion is a mandate, a political mandate. But if you look at the state of Minnesota and the map, you will notice that much of Minnesota would not support this bill. Now, they likely would support the life of the mother, abortion in the first trimester. There are a lot of people that have some feelings about that. But this discussion about paying for abortions, the challenge of pulling an infant apart as it's being aborted is very much a political mandate in my world of this is not what we want. In fact, many of my friends and neighbors or other districts spend much time helping young ladies, women, those that are older, to assist them as they may have found themselves with an unplanned pregnancy or there's a challenge with the infant as they are developed in the womb. But those are all helpers. Those are all, they spend a lot of time helping them to either prepare for a birth, prepare for a loss of a child. I've watched that happen. And also to provide other avenues of help should the pregnancy become a difficult issue for them or, you know, best for them. I've seen some very happy families have a child and decide to keep it. I've seen families testify in different areas of having a child, giving it up for adoption, watching it be successful. But I know that the people that I represent have no desire to support financially paying for abortions. And it is a huge concern in Minnesota. So as we look at what we think is a mandate, I really wonder, do you think you have a mandate to take a life and pay for it? Do you think that helping a woman, a young girl, is really what we are doing here? I don't believe so. And while I'm a little off target here with this amendment, I really think we need to repeal to retain this stricken language that is in Section 10 that would step us back from paying for abortions. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keel. And we have just about 7 minutes left, and I want to make sure that we get to the bill as that was before us as well. So if anybody still has any comments on this particular amendment, if you could be really brief, or otherwise we can go to the vote. Last word for Representative Liebling and go to the vote. Any further discussion? Representative Liebling, any Okay, Representative Liebling?
All right, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, since Doe v. Gomez was decided, Minnesotans have been covering abortion care under public programs, and that was in 1995. So that was before the Minnesota Care Program was enacted. So Minnesota Care likely, if there was a challenge to this language, it's likely unconstitutional under our Constitution. So, you know, I've heard this argument many, many times over the years that Minnesotans don't want to be paying for abortions. And I just would say that there are lots of things we all pay for that we may not agree with. I mean, I understand that, but you know, this is the way we run our democracy. We don't get to pick and choose which things we're going to pay for. And when we have public insurance for people, they have to, I believe, and I think many of us believe, that a person's source of insurance should not determine their rights to obtain an abortion and other necessary medical care. So that's really the basis of this. We don't discriminate based on the source of payment. And, you know, that's, I would say that what we are doing, Representative Keel, is we're letting people make their own decisions and not trying to stop them because they're on one program versus another program. That's why this needs to be repealed. So I would ask members to vote no.
And usually after the request is made, and this is what I've seen other committees, we don't go back, but I will briefly, Representative Keel, if you just want to make a quick comment before we go to the roll call vote.
I'll try to be as succinct as possible. I'm a talker, so that was hard. First of all, Chair Liebling, we don't legislate on likely unconstitutional. We are a separate branch of government. We make laws, and our judicial, which I'm sure you know, our judicial branch decides that. We keep saying this is unconstitutional. We do not know that. It did not go to the Supreme Court. And there's no reason to believe that. But we're assuming that. And this is just so frustrating. I can't tell you. My heart just screams the sadness of what we are doing to our Minnesotans. And I just wish you would all rethink what you are doing here.
Please.
So let's not interrupt. I just beg you, members, to think about this. Thank you.
A roll call has been requested. Representative Keel, the A7 Amendment. Will the clerk take the roll?
Chair Liebling.
No.
Vice Chair Bierman.
No.
Lead Schumacher.
Aye.
Representative Acom.
No.
Representative Backer.
Backer votes aye.
Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Carroll.
No.
Representative Elkins.
No.
Representative Fisher.
No.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
No.
Representative Herr.
No.
Representative Keel.
Aye.
Representative Murphy.
Murphy votes aye.
Representative Nadeau.
No.
Representative New Brindley.
Yes.
Representative Perryman.
Perryman, aye.
Representative Kwan.
Yes.
Representative Ryer.
No.
Representative Smith.
No.
With 7 ayes and 12 nays, the A7 amendment is not adopted. Now we will move on to the, I think I'm supposed to be pounding the gavel in between each one of those, right? I think this, the amendments are completed, and we will move to the House File 91 as unamended. We'll go to the author of the bill first.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't have any other comment about the bill itself. If there are questions, I'll try to answer them. But other than that, I think we probably could move to the vote pretty quickly.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make a couple of quick points. You know, in the beginning, the bill was introduced by saying that we have a, quote, patchwork of confusing laws. We've gone pretty thoroughly through each of these today, and there's really nothing confusing about them. They're very straightforward, very easy to understand. So what we're saying really is that instead of having any laws, we should have no laws. As it turns out, that's why we are here. That's our job here. We were also just told that we shouldn't pick and choose what we pay for. That's literally our job in the legislature. We have, as the legislature, we have the power of the purse. We are the ones who get to determine what things are paid for and what's not. I mean, it's just the discussion today has been just silly level. In how we are discussing these issues. Apparently, any laws are now problematic for any reason. any laws can create a confusing patchwork. I mean, frankly, we're all sitting here on the Health Community Committee. Many of us sit on Human Services as well. Talk about confusing laws. There's plenty of stuff confusing, but this ain't it. I would vote no to House File 91.
All right. With that, we will go to a vote on House File 91. Representative Liebling, if you have comments.
You're usually the author of the bill gets the final,
that is correct,
final word, and I just feel like I don't want to leave that really inflammatory and once again ad hominem statement hanging in the air. You know, we're not saying we should
audience, if you could refrain from making noises or comments during her closing statement.
We're not saying we should have no laws. We're saying we have laws. And we're not saying we should pick and choose what we pay for. You know, we're saying that this is health care and that these are individual decisions, private decisions of Minnesotans, and private decisions that they deserve to make in concert with their own advisors who they choose, their doctor, their own religious advisor if they choose one, their family, looking at their own situation. And that is what this bill helps to achieve. So thank you. Please vote for House File 91.
And I don't remember if there was a roll call that was requested. Okay, roll call. So wait, go ahead for the clerk. We'll take the roll.
Chair Liebling.
Aye.
Vice Chair Bierman.
Bierman votes aye.
Lead Schumacher.
No.
Representative Akam.
Aye.
Representative Backer.
Backer votes no.
Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Representative Carroll.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Fisher.
Aye.
Representative Hemmingson Yeager.
Aye.
Representative Herr.
Aye.
Representative Keel.
No.
Representative Murphy.
Murphy votes no.
I was too.
Representative Nadeau.
No.
Representative New Brindley.
No.
Representative Perryman.
Perryman, no.
Representative Quam.
Niet.
Representative Breyer.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Smith votes aye.
There being 11 ayes and 8 nays, House File 91 passes as amended and is referred to Judiciary. I think I do this. And with that, just a quick reminder that our next hearing is Tuesday, January 17th at 10:30 a.m. With that, our meeting is adjourned.